Don't touch that dial. Theater Bristol On Air presents Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. I'm your host and director, Steve Baskett, and I'd like to take a moment to introduce you to our cast. The Theater Bristol On Air ensemble includes Joshua Green, Jacob Maurer, Dalton Rudder, Taylor Bowling, Robert McCrary, Andrew Hunt, and Christina Piazza. Camille Gray is our soundographer and stage manager, and Elisa Sutton is our assistant stage manager, and Samantha Gray is our producer. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein was adapted for radio by Rick Helwig. And now, turn off your lights and don't touch that dial. It's time for Frankenstein.
To Mrs. Saville, London, from Robert Walton. My dear sister, as we are now far north of Archangel in Russia and completely surrounded by ice, I write you these lines to say I am safe and well advanced in my expedition. This letter will reach England by merchantman, now on a return voyage from Archangel. So strange an incident has happened to us that I cannot refrain from recording it. Last Monday, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the mist cleared and we saw, stretched out in every direction, a vast and irregular field of ice which seemed to have no end. My crew groaned at this sight, and my own mind began to grow watchful with anxious thoughts, when a strange sight suddenly attracted our attention. We saw a low carriage, fixed on a sledge and drawn by dogs, pass towards the north at the distance of a half mile. A being which had the shape of a man, but of a gigantic creature, sat in the sledge and guided the dogs. We watched with our telescopes until he was lost among the distant mounts of ice. As we were, we thought, hundreds of miles from the nearest land, this appearance shocked us. But as we were shut in by the ice, it was impossible to follow his track. About 2 hours later, before night, the ice broke and freed our ship. As I felt the ship start to sway, I went to the deck and found all the sailors on one side of the deck, apparently talking to someone in the sea.
Captain! Here, sir! Here is our captain. He will not allow you to perish out on the open sea.
Before I come aboard, can you tell me where you are bound?
We are on a voyage of discovery towards the North Pole.
Yes, yes, I will come aboard.
My dearest sister, never have I seen a man so emaciated by fatigue and suffering. In his eyes were a certain wildness, I might even call it madness. We carried him to my cabin and restored him to animation with brandy. When he had recovered, I began to question him as to why he had come so far on the ice in so strange a vehicle. My good man, we must be 300 miles from any habitable land. What drives you this far north?
I am seeking one who fled from me.
Did this one travel in a similar manner?
Yes.
We may have seen him. Some 4 hours before we picked you up, we saw a man, more like a giant, on a sledge drawn by dogs, traveling across the ice.
The demon. In which direction was he headed? What was his route? I must pursue him at once.
Please sit. You are hardly in any condition to go anywhere at present. Besides, you have no hope of catching him now that the ice is broken.
Yes, the broken ice. Do you suppose that the breaking of the ice has destroyed the other sledge?
That I do not know. Who is this that you track, that you call demon?
You may easily perceive, Captain Walton, that I have suffered unparalleled misfortune. I had determined, at one time, that these memories should die with me. But you have won me to alter my determination. I am by birth a Genovese. My family is one of the most distinguished of that republic. As an infant, I accompanied my parents on their many travels, and for a long time I was their only care. My mother had much desired to have a daughter, but I continued to be their only offspring. During one excursion to Milan, my parents, as was their benevolent disposition, visited the poor area of that city, and on this particular visit, became acquainted with a certain peasant woman who had taken in a little girl whose mother had died giving birth to her. My mother was quite taken with the little girl, and prevailed on her rustic guardian to yield their charge to her. Her name was Elizabeth Lavenza, and she grew up with me. No one loved Elizabeth more than I. No word, no expression could describe the kind of relation in which she stood to me. My more than sister, since till death she was to be mine only. I can see you wondering why I'm relating this story to you, but I only do it to answer your question in a way you will understand, as my story is a horribly strange one. For you to see how plainly I have come to you like this, you must understand what a happy life I lived until 4 long years ago. Loving parents, a beautiful young lady, and Elizabeth as my best friend, and bound to be my wife, made me the happiest of youth. Then, at age 17, I became a student at the University of Ingolstadt, and the omnipotent angel of destruction took the reins of my previously happy life. I was a student of natural philosophy and had spent the years prior to university studying the ancients.
Have you really spent your time studying such nonsense?
Every minute, Professor Kramp.
Every instant you have wasted on these books is utterly and entirely lost. You have burdened your memory with exploded systems and useless names. Good God! In what desert land have you lived when no one was kind enough to inform you that these fancies, which you have so greedily imbibed, are 1,000 years old and as musty as they are ancient? I little expected in this enlightened and scientific age to find a disciple of Albertus Magnus and Paracelsus. My dear sir, you must begin your studies anew.
Yes, Professor.
The ancient teachers of that science promised impossibilities and performed nothing. The modern masters promise very little. They know that metals cannot be transmuted and that the elixir of life is a fantasy. But these philosophers penetrate into the recesses of nature and show how she works in her hiding places. They have acquired new and almost unlimited powers. They can command the thunder of heaven, mimic the earthquake, and even mock the invisible world with its own shadows.
Such were the professor's words, my good Captain Bolton. Rather, let me say, such the words of fate, announced to destroy me. One by one, the various keys were touched, which forms the mechanism of my being. Chord after chord was sounded, and soon my mind was filled with one thought, one conception, one purpose. So much has been done, exclaimed the soul of Frankenstein. More, far more, will I achieve.
Victor, you must open this door. Victor!
Henry, I must be allowed to work in peace.
Your family desires that you write them, at least. It's been months, Victor. Elizabeth and your father are quite worried.
Only a short time more. That's all I need.
Victor, at least let me see you, so I can write back to Elizabeth and let her know that you are in good spirits, but very busy.
Henry, please, not now.
I will not, in good conscience, leave until I see you and know you to be healthy.
Henry, my good old friend, you must realize that I am on the verge of a startling discovery, and any delay will waste the many months I have spent on this work.
Dear Victor, I can now write to your family that I have seen you and report that while you look very tired and that you seem to have lost some weight from overwork, you are fine.
One more week, and I can, perhaps, travel to Geneva and see my dear Elizabeth and father.
I shall tell them that they will hear from you soon.
Thank you, Henry. You are more than a friend. Your patience is greatly appreciated.
I will call on you next week.
Very good. Yes, Henry. One more week. And after months of painful labor, I have discovered the cause of the generation of life. After the gruesome toils of collecting bones from the local mausoleum and body parts from the grave, a new species will bless me as its creator. And now, I behold the accomplishments of my toils. All that is left is to infuse the spark of being into this inanimate body. Captain Vulton, how could I have described all of this to Henry had I allowed him to enter that night? But had I done so, my life may have been spared the torture I am about to describe. The creature I had created was beautiful. Great God! His yellow skin barely covered the works of his muscle and arteries beneath. His hair was a lustrous black and flowing. His teeth of a pearly whiteness. But these luxuriances only formed a more horrid contrast with his watery eyes that seemed almost the same color as the drab white sockets in which they were set, his shriveled complexion and straight black lips. With an anxiety that almost amounted to agony, I collected the instruments of life around me that I might infuse a spark of being into this lifeless body. And at about 1 a.m, I saw the dull yellow eyes of the creature open. It breathed hard, and a convulsive motion agitated its limbs.
Good God!
No, Captain. God had nothing to do with it.
And this was the giant we saw on the ice?
Yes. The convulsive motions grew, and before I knew what was happening, the creature was on his feet before me, and his eyes, if eyes they may be called, were fixed on me.
No! Stop! What are you doing? No! Let go! Release me!
Oh, Henry! Good Lord! What are you doing out?
My dear Victor, you look as if you've seen a ghost. What are you running from?
Do not ask me that. Dearest Henry, how kind, how very kind you are to me. This whole winter, instead of being spent in study, you've looked after me and been the link between my family and me. How can I ever repay you?
You can repay me entirely by getting there as fast as you can. Let me walk you to your apartment. I have been visiting a friend in these parts and he has sent me away with a most excellent bottle of brandy. Come, I'll walk you back and pour a drink for you. Here we are. Now up the stairs. We'll pour a drink and see that you get some proper rest this night.
Henry, I'd rather not go in just yet. Let's continue our walk a little bit.
Nonsense! You are ill and need your rest. What's this? The door to your room is open. There seems to be broken glass on the floor.
Henry, no! Don't go in there!
Don't touch that dial. Thank you for tuning in to Theater Bristol on Air's Frankenstein. We will return after this message recognizing our sponsors.
Theatre Bristol On Air could not provide entertainment such as Frankenstein without support from its partners and sponsors, the City of Bristol, Tennessee, Leticia Peltzer, ENT and Allergy Consultants, and United Company Foundation.
Now we return to Frankenstein, presented by Theatre Bristol On Air. Don't touch that dial. As you will recall from Act 1, Victor Frankenstein, being rescued from the crushing ice of the Arctic Circle, tells his story to his rescuer, Captain Walton. Walton, having rescued Frankenstein, who was in pursuit of a demon, is told the story of how he came to be in the frozen wasteland, 1,000 miles from the nearest town, and of his creation of the monster.
Captain Walton, never in my life had I been as terrified as I was at that moment upon returning to my flat, and never since discovering that the monster had left my flat have I stopped being terrified. It was completely destroyed. I explained it away to Henry by claiming that I had been violated by robbers and neglected telling him at first out of fear. We spent the better part of the night putting my flat back in order as my mind raced in hopes that the monster would not return, and at the same time wondering where he had run to and what kind of havoc he would wreak. Some weeks passed and I had made up my mind to return to my family in Geneva. It had been 6 years since I had last seen my hometown or my family, and since my departure, my younger brother William had been born and my mother had passed away. The journey home was a long and melancholy one, over which a sense of dark foreboding hung. I knew, as I stepped from the coach, that my feelings were true.
Oh, Victor! How I wanted to return to be a happy one!
My dear, sweet Elizabeth, what is it?
No, I had promised myself that a smile would be the first thing you saw of me after our 6 year separation. But I cannot produce a smile.
Please, tell me what has happened.
How can I prepare you for such woeful news? It is impossible. William is dead. That sweet little child, brother of yours, who you never met, was murdered.
Murdered? How? By whom?
Last Thursday, your father, William, and I went on a walk in Plain Palais. Little William had run far ahead of us, as he usually did, and he disappeared. We thought he was playing a game with us. But when darkness came and he still did not show himself, we became worried. And then we found him, strangled and thrown into the creek bed.
Good God!
But the terrible story does not end there. The authorities believe they have the murderer in custody.
But how? Who?
They have arrested poor Justine Moritz.
Impossible! Justine has been in our employ since she was a child, and is one of the family.
I know Justine could not be William's killer. Everyone knows that.
Those who arrested her are mistaken. I know the murderer. Justine is innocent. It was at that moment, Captain Walton, that I knew the horror which I had lived with as a nightmare for the past several months was indeed coming to be. Justine was innocent. But in the end, she was found guilty by the court and hanged. Both the death of my brother and Justine for my doing. And this brought me to a hell of intense torture, such as no language can describe. I lived in daily fear that the monster I created would perpetrate new evil. And this drove me to the brink of suicide. It was at this point that I became determined to see the monster again and avenge the death Justine and little William. Captain, I detect something of an ironic look in your eye.
Forgive me, your story is tragic, and I have no doubt that before the end it will grow in sorrow. But it seems that you began by the search for life, and your quest has led you in quite the opposite direction.
Quite so, Captain. There was a time in all this, however, when I had the chance to choose life.
You rejected it?
Not at first. After the death of William and Justine, I decided to go into the mountains with the hope of finding some peace amongst the beauty of nature. One day, during a vicious rainstorm, I ascended to the top of Mountain Vert. The climb was beautiful, and by noon I had reached the top. As I rested at the summit, I thought that this would be the last happiness of my life, and I should soon be taken away from all joys. And I saw, at some distance, the figure of a man advancing toward me at superhuman speed. He bounded over the crevices on which I had fought with caution. I perceived, as the shape came nearer, that it was the wretch I had created. Devil! You dare approach me?
This is no reception I expected.
Come closer, and I will trample you to dust.
All men hate the wretched. How then must I be hated, who am miserable beyond all living things?
I will extinguish your miserable life to avenge those victims you murdered in cold blood.
You propose to kill me? How dare you make such sport with life? Do your duty towards me, and I will do mine towards you and the rest of mankind.
The torches of hell are too mild a vengeance for your crimes.
If you comply with my conditions, I will disappear and leave you in peace. But if you refuse, then I will glut the mouth of death until it be filled with the blood of your remaining friends.
I'll kill you!
Try it! I could easily cross you! You who gave me life now wish to kill me? Here is my demand. You must create a female mate for me with whom I can live in peace. You are the only one who can do this, and I demand it of you. As my creator, you cannot refuse me.
I do refuse, and no torture shall ever force me to do so. Shall I create another like yourself, whose wickedness might ravage the world?
You are wrong. I run malicious because I am miserable. I am hated by all mankind. Even you, my creator, would destroy me. Oh, my creator, make me happy and make me a bride as hideous as myself. And you shall never see either of us again.
You've proposed to flee from the habitation of man?
I swear it to you.
You swear to be harmless, but have you not already murdered several people? A child included? Why should I trust you?
I swear by the sun and by the blue sky of heaven that if you grant my prayer, you shall never behold me again.
If this is so, I consent to your demands. On your solemn oath to quit Europe forever and every other place in the neighborhood of man, as soon as I deliver into your hands a female who will accompany you into exile.
Depart to your home and start your work. I shall watch your progress with great anxiety. And fear not, but that when you are ready, I shall appear.
And with that pronouncement, the monster disappeared, Captain Volton. I should say that he disappeared from sight, but I knew he would always be with me as I headed back to Geneva and my family.
Had you any intention to keep your promise to the fiend?
In the beginning, I couldn't collect the courage to even start my work. I feared the vengeance of the beast, but I was unable to overcome my repulsion to the task. I clung to every pretense of delay.
Was there any sign of the creature during this time?
None. But I could feel his presence, and knew I must begin my work. I had decided not to enter into this terrible chore in Geneva, but to travel to a more remote location. I had announced my plans to my father when he showed a great concern for my future and well-being.
It grieves me, my son, to see you continue to linger in unhappiness. You avoid our society and spend so much time by yourself. Yesterday, an idea struck me that, if it is well-founded, I ask that you admit it.
What is it, father?
I confess that I have always looked forward to your marriage to our dear Elizabeth. As you grew up together, studied together, and have been so closely attached to each other, you perhaps regard her as your sister, without any wish that she might become your wife. Have you met another you love? Do you feel bound in honor to Elizabeth? Is this what is troubling you?
Father, I love Elizabeth, tenderly and sincerely. My future hopes and prospects are entirely bound in the expectation of our union.
I cannot tell you how happy this makes me, Victor. Tell me then, whether you object to an immediate marriage. I do not wish to dictate happiness to you, but as our situation has been so full of gloom, an affair such as a wedding might work to bring cheer back into our lives.
We will wed, Father, but before we do, I have business I must take care of in England.
Can you not go to England afterward?
I promise you that upon my return from England, we will wed, and life here will return once again to happiness. As I readied for England, Father and Elizabeth informed me that they had arranged for Henry Clerval to accompany me as a companion. I was headed for the solitude of the north of Scotland to carry out the heinous task I agreed to, and even though Henry was a dear friend, his presence interfered with my task. But travel with me he did, and as the journey commenced, I was glad he was with me. It was the latter end of September when we left Switzerland for England. I learned along the way that Henry had some very close friends in London, Oxford, and as far north as Perth in Scotland. I visited with his friends in London and Oxford, but when we arrived in Perth, I told Henry that I wished to travel on my own for a month or two, but that Perth would be our point of rendezvous. I then parted from my friend and headed to a remote spot of Scotland to do my work in solitude. I had no doubt that the monster had followed me.
Had you seen him along the way?
No, but my work was of great interest to him. I knew he would make himself known when I finished. I hired a shanty on a remote island in the Orkneys, and in this retreat, I began my sickening work. The longer I labored, the more sickening the work became. It was a filthy process.
But one you had done before?
The first time, I was blinded by an enthusiastic frenzy, and now I was horrified. But I went forward in cold blood, every moment expecting to see the creature which drove me to this. I sat one evening in my laboratory. The sun had set, and a red moon was rising from the sea. My bloody task was moments from conclusion, and as I sat, I began to consider the effect of what I was now doing. 3 years earlier, I was engaged in the same manner, and had created a fiend whose barbarity had desolated my heart. I was now about to create another just like it. Might she become 10 times more murderous than her mate? For the first time, the wickedness of my promise burst upon me, and as it did, I looked up and saw, by the light of the moon, the demon at the casement.
You are almost finished!
I shall not finish!
What are you doing?
I will tear to pieces this evil work!
No!
Never will I create another like yourself!
You are my creator! But I am your master! Obey! Or I will make you so miserable that the light of day will be hateful to you!
Devil! Cease! Leave me be! I am through!
So be it! But remember this! I shall be with you on your wedding night!
Don't touch that dial. We will return to Frankenstein after this thanks to our sponsor.
Citizens Bank, HVAC Incorporated, Summit BSR Roofing, Seaman Corporation, Water Heater Pros, and M&M Bookkeeping and Tax Services.
And now back to Frankenstein. In our last segment, Victor Frankenstein, in relating his story to Captain Walton, described how he was driven to the remote regions in northern Scotland to create a mate for the monster he had given life to 3 years earlier. Nearing completion of his bloody task, Victor remembered that the fiend he first created had killed several people, including his younger brother William. The monster appeared to claim his bride, and Victor tore apart the lifeless body, sending the creature into a rage, promising Victor that he will get his revenge on Victor's wedding night.
I will be with you on your wedding night. Captain Walton, those words still ring in my ear like a death knell. Immediately upon saying them, the creature vanished into the night. I decided then and there that I, too, must return to my friend Henry and then to Geneva. But before I departed, I had to dispose of the remains of the creature I had begun but destroyed. Body parts lay strewn around my room, scattered on the floor, and I felt as if I had mangled the living flesh of a real human being. I gathered the parts, put them in a basket, and filled it with rocks to throw into the sea that very night. With the moon to guide me, I took a small boat far away from shore and cast my bloody basket into the sea. I was exhausted, and the slow roll of the waves lulled me to sleep. I must have slept for hours, for when I awoke, I found that the sun had already risen considerably. The wind was high and had driven me far from the coast. I felt I must have been driven into the wide Atlantic. I was out for many hours when I saw a line of high land towards the south. As I floated closer, I saw a small, neat town in a good harbor. I noticed a small group of people forming as I got closer.
Hello, my good friends! Will you be so kind as to tell me the name of this town and inform me where I am?
You'll know soon enough.
Maybe you're coming to a place that'll not prove much to your taste.
But you'll not be consulted as to your quarters, I promise you.
Why do you answer me so rudely? Surely it is not the custom of Englishmen to receive strangers so inhospitably.
It is a custom of the Irish to hate villains.
Grab him.
Lock him up.
I got
Don't
the rope.
Let him get away.
No. Release me.
You ain't going nowhere.
You come with us. It's Magistrate Kerwin to give an account of yourself.
Why am I to give an account of myself? Is this not a free country?
Get his feet.
Aye, sir. Free enough for honest folks, but not for murderers.
You'll pay for your crimes.
To the gallows with him. Rake him over the
All right, coals. All right.
Just flat out kill him.
Sir, it seems you're suspected of the murder of a stranger found on the beach this morning by one of the lads.
I was lost at sea and drifted to your shore. I know nothing
Drag
of
him
this
away.
Matter.
Lost at sea, my arse.
Quiet,
we
please.
All know you're guilty.
At the time the body was found, a boat just like yours with a single man in it was seen offshore. As it was still somewhat dark, positive identification cannot be made. The body found was a man of your age. He was apparently strangled, for there were no signs of any violence, except for some black marks made by fingers around his neck.
I must see the body.
It is an internment here.
I must see it now.
So, if you must. The body's in this coffin.
Henry!
You know this man.
Two. I have already destroyed. Other victims await their destiny, but you, Henry, my friend, my benefactor.
Help! In here! Quickly! Take this man to the jail and lock him up. He will be tried for murder.
I spent 3 months in that jail, Captain Walton. 3 months in a kind of delirium. I raved that I was the murderer of William and Justine, as well as my good friend Henry Clerval. Sometimes I entreated my jailers to assist me in the destruction of the fiend by whom I was tormented. And at other times, I could feel the monster's fingers around my neck, and I screamed with agony and terror. At length, word was sent to my father, who made his way to the small Irish village. He traveled nearly 100 miles to the country town where my trial was held. Magistrate Kerwin arranged for my defense. In the end, I was found not guilty for lack of evidence and was liberated from prison. Upon release, my father and I departed Ireland and returned to Geneva.
Still, my father did not know the origin of my sufferings and became extremely anxious at the state of my being. I abhorred the face of my fellow man. After all, I have unchained an enemy among them, and how they would abhor me if only they knew of my crime. Father, I am the cause of William's death. I murdered Justine and Henry. They all died by my hands.
What infatuation is this? Never make such an assertion again.
I'm not mad. I am the assassin of those innocent victims.
Do not speak like this. Heavy misfortunes have befallen us, but let us only cling closer to what remains and transfer our love for those whom we have lost to those who yet live. You will return to Geneva and be made happy again by your wedding.
I will be with you on your wedding night.
It is always so beautiful to return home after being away for such a long time, and how extra beautiful it must be to you.
Geneva has always offered me a certain tranquility.
There is our home now.
And dear Elizabeth.
Victor, I've missed you so much.
As I have missed you, my dear Elizabeth.
I will leave you two alone and go greet the others.
Uncle Alphonse, I'm sorry. Greetings to you too.
Do not apologize, my dear. Your Victor is home safe and sound. You two have much to discuss. I will see you at dinner.
Welcome home, Uncle.
Thank you, Father.
How are you, Victor? You look so tired.
I am so happy to see you, my dear love. But I'm afraid little happiness remains for us on Earth.
I had hoped with all my heart to see peace in your eyes.
Elizabeth, all that I may one day enjoy is centered on you. To you alone do I devote my life.
And I love you deeply. My only wish in life is to see you happy.
I hold a dreadful secret, one that, when revealed to you, will chill your heart with horror. And then, you will not be surprised by my misery. You will only wonder that I survive what I have endured.
Victor, what is it?
I cannot tell you till after our marriage, and I must ask that until then, you do not mention or allude to it. Just know that I will tell you my secret then. As the date of our marriage grew closer, Captain Bolton, be it from cowardice or a prophetic feeling, I felt my heart sink with me. It was agreed that after our union, we would immediately travel to a villa on Lake Como in northern Italy. I took every precaution in case the fiend should openly attack me. I carried pistols and a dagger constantly. On our wedding day, Elizabeth grew extremely melancholy and a presentiment of evil occupied her. After the ceremony, it was agreed that Elizabeth and I should commence our journey by water, sleeping that night at Evian, and continue our voyage on the following day. We landed at Evian at 8 o'clock that night, and walked for a short time on the shore, watching the setting sun. You are sorrowful, my dear love. If you knew what I have suffered and what I may yet endure, you would endeavor to let me taste quiet and freedom from despair that this one day at least permits me to enjoy.
What is it that agitates you, my dear Victor? What is it you fear?
Peace! Peace, my love! This night and all will be safe. But this night is dreadful. Very dreadful. Here is the walk to the inn.
Have you not listened to this sinister voice? Let us retire and get this night behind us.
I will not be able to sleep. Come, I will walk you to our room. You turn in. I will be in shortly.
Be happy, my dear Victor, and please, be careful.
I will, my love. Elizabeth!
I am with you on your wedding night, my creator! And now, your bride joins mine in hell!
Don't touch that body, Dial. We'll be back with the horrifying conclusion of Frankenstein right after this.
Theater Bristol on Air wouldn't be possible without our sponsors. Celebrate Rentals, WCYB News 5, the Bristol Herald Courier, the Home Depot, and WETS 89.5 FM.
Thank you. Now let's return to Theater Bristol on Air's Frankenstein. Accused of the murder of his friend Henry Clerval, Victor Frankenstein spent 3 months in jail in a small Irish town where he landed, after being swept out to sea while disposing of the body parts of the mate he was making for the creature. Released from prison for lack of evidence, Victor returned to Geneva and married Elizabeth. The fiend he created 4 years before made good on his vow, and on Victor and Elizabeth's wedding night, murdered Elizabeth.
Now, your bride joins mine in hell!
The demon seemed to mock me, Captain Walton, as he pointed towards the corpse of my wife. The murderous mark of his grasp was on her neck. He climbed to the ledge of the window. I rushed him, drew my pistol, and fired, but he eluded me. The fiend jumped from the window, ran to the lake, and disappeared. I stood stunned for a moment. Elizabeth's body lay on the floor with the murderous marks of the fiend's grasp around her throat. I swore at that moment to pursue that demon to the ends of the earth until either he or I perished in mortal combat.
And hence your boarding of this vessel?
Yes.
It seems he could kill you if he so chose.
His reign over me is not yet over!
Why do you pursue him? It will mean your death.
I am haunted by the ghosts of those murdered. The only way to silence those tortured spirits is the death of the fiend or myself. The fiend has headed here, to the ice of the north, because he knows I will feel the misery of the cold to which he is impervious. But again do I vow vengeance. Again do I devote the powers of my life to seeing that he suffers a miserable death. Never will I give up my search until he or I perish. And then, with what ecstasies shall I join my Elizabeth and my departed friends?
Frankenstein!
I must continue my pursuit!
You are too weak to even stand!
Alas, the strength I relied on is gone. I feel that I shall soon die.
Here, sit up!
No! Leave me. Farewell, Captain Walton. Seek happiness in tranquility and avoid ambition, even if it be an apparently innocent one. Why do I say this? I myself have been blasted in these hopes. Yet another may succeed.
Frankenstein! Frankenstein! What is it?
Come and listen! A voice is shouting from somewhere across the ice!
You're hearing things. It was just the wind.
No, it was a voice shouting, prepare! That was all! Prepare!
Good God! Frankenstein!
This is also my victim! The miserable series of my being is wound to a close. Frankenstein! What good is it that I now ask you to pardon me? I, who destroyed you by destroying all that you loved. Alas, he is cold and cannot answer me.
Your repentance is for naught. If you had listened to the voice of conscience before you had urged your vengeance to this extremity, Frankenstein would still be alive.
Do you dream? Tell me what you dream of. Dreams of pleasure,
no longer exist for me. They were torn from my heart by Victor Frankenstein. I am a wretch. I have murdered the lovely and the helpless. I have strangled the innocent as they slept and grasped to death his throat, who never injured me, nor any living thing. I have sentenced my creator to a life of misery and pursued him to ruin. There he lies, white and cold in death. You hate me, but your hate cannot equal that which I feel for myself. Soon, I shall die, and that feeling will no longer live. I will burn and rejoice in the agony of torturing flames. My ashes will be swept to the sea, and my spirit will sleep in peace. Yes. Farewell.
He's jumped overboard, Captain!
My dearest Margaret, it is past. I am returning to England. I have lost my hopes of glory. I have lost my friend. But I will endeavor to detail these bitter circumstances to you, my dear sister. And while I am wafted towards England and towards you, I will not despond. Margaret, what comment can I make on the untimely extinction of the glorious spirit that was Victor Frankenstein? What can I say that will enable you to understand the depth of my sorrow? I journey towards England, and I may there find consolation.
Don't touch that dial. Thank you for listening to Theatre Bristol On Air's production of Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. Frankenstein was adapted for radio by Rick Helwig. I'm your host and director, Steve Baskett. The Frankenstein Ensemble includes Joshua Green, Jacob Maurer, Dalton Rudder, Taylor Bowling, Robert McCrary, Andrew Hunt, and Christina Piazza. Camille Gray is our soundographer and stage manager, and Elisa Sutton is our assistant stage manager, and Samantha Gray is our producer. Please go to theaterbristol.org to listen to our other radio productions or learn more about upcoming shows. On behalf of the cast and crew, farewell.
I'm Samantha Gray, and on behalf of Theater Bristol, your community theater, thank you for tuning in to Theater Bristol On Air's presentation of Frankenstein. Congratulations to director Steve Baskett and the entire cast for a wonderful production. I hope you are giving them a big applause and that you enjoyed this gothic thriller. There will be more Theatre Bristol On Air, so stay tuned for upcoming auditions and opportunities. And subscribe to Theatre Bristol On Air through your favorite podcast service. We've taken our season to the air because we want to keep drama and comedy and thrillers and science fiction and the classics and more live performances entertaining you, as well as giving you opportunities to perform. Back on stage, we will be bringing you Broadway musical favorites on the Paramount stage in November in All Together Now, and The Gift of the Magi in December, along with our live Christmas scenes throughout the holidays. Information for auditions is available online as well as performances. We've been your community theater for 56 years now, and we hope you will help us continue this vital part of our community. We invite you now to give back so we can keep drama on and off stage. Your contributions help sustain our nonprofit organization with family-friendly productions and education. Please give now, perhaps the cost of a ticket or two, at theaterbristol.org, and then share this production so others may enjoy it. Thank you.